Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. Today we're going to get into the liver and gallbladder, a subject that many of my listeners know, I think, much about. But there is room for improvement. Today's show, a deeper explanation of liver and gallbladder function. There's lots of nuances of liver and gallbladder that a lot of people don't know and don't understand, and I want to get into that today. So get to the website, as always, straighttalk.cc. If you're listening and you're on the road, when you get a chance, get to the website. I'm going to refer to the pictures a lot. I like to do that. You can take the time to look at the pictures. You can learn so much more. If not, just use that imagination. Okay. Everybody knows about the olive oil flush. Everybody's heard about coffee enemas. For what reason do we flush the liver and the gallbladder? I think your compliance depends on your understanding. So let's deepen the understanding. First of all, you begin your concern where the symptom is. You begin your concern where the tumor is. You begin your concern where the pain is. If they tell you your eye has the disease, if they tell you your back has the disc herniation, if they tell you your organ, your colon, your liver, your kidney has the tumor, understandably, that's where you begin your concern. Where you have pain, or somebody tells you you have a problem. But you don't make the connection necessarily, not the real connection, thus the show today, between liver function and your symptom, liver function and whatever's going on in your brain, or your kidney, or your pancreas. There's a sequence of understanding that we got to get into today. So let's get into a principle. And the principle we want to discuss, the basic physiological mechanism we want to call your attention to today, is the fact that whatever garbage gets in your blood, and by garbage I mean pesticides, petrochemicals, viruses, bacteria, parasites, heavy metals, all the endogenous, meaning all the poisons, toxins that your body makes that you have to excrete, anything under the term waste product in blood that shouldn't be there, sets you up for a potential dilemma. And that dilemma is if it can't get out fast enough through your excretory organs, your liver, your kidney, your skin, your breath, so on and so forth, your intestines, if it can't get out fast enough, the brain, the all-knowing, all-watching, all-seeing brain, through the nervous system, watching this buildup of garbage in the blood, and starting to get scared that that garbage is going to go up to the brain itself, which is a highly sensitive nerve tissue, right? Sensitive to the point where it's got to protect itself. Sensitive to the point where there's something called the blood-brain barrier. It's a bunch of capillary tufts that protects the brain from a lot of things that will get to any other part of your body, but not the brain. So the brain watching the blood wants to make sure that it doesn't get harmed. And the minute it sees poison in the blood that can't get out fast enough, the brain will stuff it into the organ system. So effectively, your organ systems become a storage site, or basically a garbage dump for all the stuff that should have gone out of the body, but was building up so fast that your excretory organs, particularly, mainly, primarily your liver, couldn't handle. Now, your fat-soluble poisons, which are your worst harmful chemicals, all your toxic estrogens, your xenoestrogens, and your pesticide derivatives, so on and so forth, many, many, many. If you looked at the sum total of poisons man-made circulating in your blood each day, the majority of them are fat-soluble, meaning if they can't get out of the blood through the liver, because the liver is going to take your fat-soluble ones out, if they can't get out of the blood, they're going to store in the fatty part of the organs. Ladies, that's your breast tissue. Gentlemen, that's your prostate. Wherever you have fat, you have filth, at least if you're living in Southern California. So on top of fat now not being what you want, we have this wonderful insight that the fat that you don't want is filled with the worst garbage. And that's the truth. I did a show a year ago or so on visceral fat, the organ fat. And yes, the organ fat is even dirtier than the adipose fat. And it's closer to the organ. So effectively what happens is the minute or on the overall where the blood can't drain fast enough, where the blood cannot drain itself quickly enough because the biliary system, the liver, is plugged up, you start to develop a higher concentration of toxic fat around the fat of the organ. So the cells of the organ are swimming in this toxic fat. And when those cells swim in the toxic fat, they start to panic. Because those cells need a clean intercellular space, meaning the extracellular. So let's not confuse you. The extracellular space, the space outside the cell, thus the space in between the cells. When that space gets too dirty, the cells pick up on it. The cells are smart too. The cells are in communication with each other. The cells are in communication with the nervous system. The nervous system's in connection with the brain. So effectively, the brain are talking to the cells. You really got to get that, even though you don't think about it, right? This is all mediated through what? The autonomic nervous system. The nerve plexuses that you don't think about, that function by themselves, that of course become defective if you're in high stress, high chronic stress, those nerve lines function normally to keep a communication route between the brain and the cells. And when that extracellular space gets too filthy, because the blood keeps throwing its garbage there, because the blood can't clean itself through the liver and the biliary system, well, those cells then start to derange. They start to change their shape. They start to displace or become dysplastic. And there's lots of words in pathology to describe these different changes in the morphology of the cell. But as a cell is changing its morphology, that cell is becoming less functional. So there's a concept under stress, under chemical stress or biological stress, the cell will exchange structure for function. It'll compromise function because it'll change its structure to adapt to that filthy environment. So really then, if it's losing function to adapt to the environment, that loss of function ultimately becomes what? Your symptom. That symptom ultimately becomes your disease. And all your organs, all our organs, are doing this all the time at some rate. The slower those organs do it, the longer you stay young. Longevity is the relative rate at which these organs do exactly what I just described. So in this context then, in this context, disease takes an interesting interpretation. We say disease is just an adaptation. We might even say cancer, a tumor, is just an adaptation. Chronic illness is just an adaptation. That's the marvelous way to look at it. That's the way we should be looking at your symptom, about your illness, about your disease. That's what your doctors should be explaining to you, but of course they don't. And then in the holistic community, if we reduce understandings like this to what herb can I take for my symptom or what herb can I take for my problem, then we miss the point too. So as always, and you know my theme, it comes down to a deeper exploration, thus the name of the show today. I am ever vowed to the notion that you have to have a deeper explanation because you won't be compliant. People are not compliant. People are busy. The last thing they want to do is study. The last thing they want to do is really learn about their bodies. They're busy. They got things to do. The most they're going to do is spend a little bit of money on something that's natural to help them. And then that's it. That's it. And nobody's calling. Not enough people are calling. Okay? We're still in the shortcut phase. You know, America, in a sense, is a cliff note country. Cliff note in the sense that we love the shortcuts. And that's understandable. But what happens when everybody's busy and everybody's too busy is we end up running around in circles sometimes. You pay more in the long run because you're looking for the shortcut. And I think holistic medicine is falling a bit prey to that problem. So, yes, you do understand the importance in the general sense of liver and gallbladder flushes. You could assemble a lot of people at your health seminars, at your anti-aging conferences, and they'd all agree, yes, liver and gallbladder flushes are essential. They're important things to do. But the minute somebody has a symptom or a disease, that's when we lose continuity because we don't have the depth of understanding. So, concept. What gets into the blood that's fat soluble that can harm you needs to come out through the biliary system. The minute the rate at which it excretes through the biliary system does not compensate for the buildup of it in the blood, the brain will shunt it into the organs. And the cells won't receive it unless they have to, but the intercellular space, the extracellular space, I should say, when the concentration builds up in the extracellular space, that's when the cells start to freak out. And they will choose at some point to respond, and that adaptive response is the beginning of the symptom or the disease. Now, those responses we've actually talked about before, right? They can range from apoptosis, where the cells all kill themselves. When you see things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, you're looking at apoptotic sequences. Either the cells commit suicide or they just become senescent or senile and they don't do anything. They're there. They haven't been replaced by scar tissue. They're still present, but they're dead in a sense. They're corpses, but they're present. Apoptosis is a suicide to the point where you don't even see the cells. The cells have been replaced by nothing but scar tissue. And then, of course, the most fascinating of the three choices that this cell in whatever organ you choose will undergo, the most fascinating to me is malignancy. The cell will become anaplastic. It will reproduce itself in response to this toxic extracellular space. But it will reproduce itself in a sequence that, well, functionally makes it insane. It's an insane cell, reproducing unwantedly without any sense of control. Just a lost cell in a jungle of pain that kind of lost its way. And that's what we call a tumor. So whether the cell goes malignant, whether the cell goes apoptotic, or whether the cell goes senescent, it's catalyzed by the increasing filth in the extracellular fluid that the blood is shunting to it because the liver can't handle it. Now that in a nutshell is why you have to flush the liver. Why you have to open up the biliary system of the liver. So if you go to picture one, again on straighttalk.cc, if you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. You won't hear a show like this across the nation. I don't think anybody's summing it up this well right now. This show will take you straight to the heart of why you do what you do. then you can just cruise YouTube and you can buy the books out there for the how-to part of it. How to do a liver flush. I put Maritz's great book, The Great Gallbladder Flush, on one of my squares today. And you can get a book like that, or you can take anybody's, Holder Clark's Liver Gallbladder Flush. That's not the intention of the show. How you do it is not my intention. Why you do it. It's pretty easy to do it. But to have people be compliant, that's a matter of understanding why you do it. Picture number one, look at that. There's a congested biliary system. Picture number one. Great little cartoon, huh? All the big, that's that big 7-pound liver, that big hunk of brown there with those hundreds of passageways in there, and they're all clogged up with bile. And that blockage goes right into the gallbladder, right into the cystic duct, right into the common bile duct. It's even backing up the pancreas. Now, it's very important to understand that when the liver is like that, the rate at which the blood clears itself obviously is very poor. But, you know, this is only one function of the liver. The biliary system is only one small part of the liver. The liver's got, I think Guyton states, 1,600 known functions. We're talking about one. This thing about cleanse the liver, flush the liver, absolutely important, supremely important. We're doing part of the show on that. That's how important. I just stated how important. But bottom line, there is about 1,600 functions in the liver. Not to get it too complicated, but if you go on to picture number five, if you go to picture number five, you're going to look at classically what we call phase one and phase two liver detoxification. And all that means, now this has nothing to do with your biliary system. I mean, we're not talking about a biliary function here. We're talking about how the liver deposes of all the garbage that comes its way. There's hundreds of different chemical equations, chemical attacks that the liver will make, and they require all sorts of support. But if we were going to look at the specific chemical attacks, we'd say there are oxidation reduction reactions, there's hydrolysis, hydration, dehalogenation, and that's five of these dozens of things that your hepatocytes, your liver cells are doing each day. Now, how are they supported? Well, in that picture there, you see nutrients needed. The B vitamins, folic acid, glutathione, the flavonoids. And, of course, the myth of nutrition then, in part, is, well, you're going to go out and just load up on those vitamins and glutathione and flavonoids, and that's going to give you much better phase one detoxification. You know, that's to some extent, if you're starving, and there are enough Americans whose dietary habits are so poor that you are starving, but if you're eating reasonably well, you've got most of all you need in your body right now. And I think this is one of the slants in nutrition. To isolate an important component of the physiology of an organ, phase one detoxification of the liver, to note that there are certain vitamins and micronutrients and you know, specialty compounds that are part of this, and then if we can synthesize them in a bottle and send them back to you or for a grocery store shelf, then all of a sudden you should buy them because you'll get more phase one detoxification. And of course, this is mythical. And your hard chemists who don't have vested interests in nutrition come in and they say this is nonsense. And, you know, part of the time it is nonsense, which is not to say there are not many natural, critical ways to influence the physiology of your liver that you must address with nutrients. But there's aspects of it that are kind of mythical. And this notion that once you isolate a particular physiology in an organ and note what vitamins and minerals and specialty items it needs, that you're going to improve that by throwing more of those specialty items in, like more glutathione and more flavonoids and more B vitamins, well, that's where we're pushing it. just want to point that out for some of you people out there that actually understand this. But phase one of liver detoxification is phase one. Then there's conjugation. And conjugation is we throw on some part, some compound, we throw on. So we take a poison and we take it apart in phase one. And then in phase two, we gift wrap it so you can urinate it out or defecate it out. So phase one is we kind of like punch it in the head 50 times. And phase two is we gift wrap it. So then we send it to the kidney and it goes out in the urine, or it actually goes out in the biliary system. And if it can go out through the kidney in the urine, it may go out through the skin also. You may be able to sweat it out. So again, point, key point. When we talk about the liver's 1,600 known functions, that's Arthur Guyton. The biliary system's only one. It's a critical one, but it's only one. There's many others, and you can break them down like this into phase one and phase two. See, look at phase two. There you go. Nutrients needed: cysteine, magnesium, glutathione, taurine, glycine. So why don't you just go to Whole Foods and clear out one entire section of the health food shelf with more of this stuff, because you know that you live in a toxic environment. You live down there by the Long Beach port, and you know your liver is working extra hard. And so you might as well start stuffing these vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients in there. And that's my point. You got to slow down there. If you want to compare that to cleaning out your bile ducts, well, in that biliary thing, now we're talking. If we want to talk about herbs like Chinese coin grass that clean out the bile ducts, or bitter orange or bupleurum that open up the bile ducts, or magnesium to relax the bile ducts, or olive oil flushes or coffee enemas, now you're exporting natural medicine, herbs, cleanses intelligently. So you understand it's a two-sided coin. What you spend your money, time, and energy on in holistic medicine is very influenced by your education. Very important to understand, or you don't get what you want. You spend a lot of dough, a lot of time, a lot of energy, and you're very surprised when things don't work out. So don't let this be you. If you get a chance and you're not on the website, get to the website. I've got 266 shows. If you're listening from other radio stations, well, not today, but anybody listening anywhere in any way, make sure you get to these 266 shows. Really get involved that way. It's a whole other slant. Over 5 years now, increasingly, I see the need to get on the air and say the things I'm saying. So really look at these as a primer. It's kind of like a self-study course. It's a home study course. People all over the world, as this grows, really help themselves if they just study it. You got to put this on the A list. So give that a thought. Give that a thought. All right, phase one, phase two, liver detoxification. Enough said. Look at picture number four. Functions of the liver. Look at that. It makes the bile. It conjugates the bilirubin. It has a lot to do with carbohydrate metabolism, fat metabolism. It makes your cholesterol. It makes your albumin. It makes your clotting factors. It stores your glycogen, it stores your B12, it stores your vitamin A. Enough said, you can look at that by yourself. Now, let's get to another important point. Let's take a look here at what happens when the liver cells themselves, the hepatocytes, when they start to, we'll go to picture number seven, stages of liver damage. If you overload the liver, so a moment ago, we were talking about overloading the blood because the liver can't move stuff out, phase one and phase two and out through the bile ducts. If the liver can't do that fast enough, it builds up in the blood and that creates a bad environment for your cells and you have bad results. But what about when the liver cells themselves are overworked? when they can't clean themselves fast enough, when they start to succumb to the same damage that any one of your organs can, well, the liver then starts to grow fat into itself. You go from a healthy liver to a fatty liver. Tons of people out there live with fatty livers and they don't know it. Tons of people, see, the way you have to look at organ function that they don't tell you at Kaiser Permanente, that they don't tell you at your yearly physical exams, that they should, but that they don't, is that if you pick an organ, every single 5 years, that organ is degrading. Every single year, that organ is degrading. And just because God was smart enough to give us extra reserve into each organ function doesn't mean we're not suffering as these organs degrade. So if you're 50, your brain doesn't function as well as it did when you were 10. And when you're 70, your liver, your kidneys, your heart, your spleen, your pancreas, your duodenal system, your joints. At 70, you're not functioning like you did when you were 50. But you don't have to have a disease. You can be absolutely healthy according to the people that are in the know. You can be actually completely healthy, symptom-free at the age of 70, except you know at 70 you're not 50 and you're not 30 and you're not 20. And you know, that's just a matter of the fact that all those organs are degrading. So since we're talking about the liver, since it does 1,600 things, let's focus on another aspect of liver function. Is the liver starting to become fatty? Meaning, are those liver cells chronically inflaming because they're working too hard and not efficiently enough to the point where, as a byproduct of this low-grade inflammatory process, you start growing fat into the liver? You grow fat into the liver. Guess what? This is so fascinating. You grow fat into the liver as a repository for the poisons that the liver cells can't metabolize as fast as they're coming in. In other words, fat is just a storage site for the garbage that the liver cells can't get to. It's as if all these molecules of pesticide and petrochemical and heavy metal and virus and bacteria and parasite, they all descend upon the liver so fast that the liver says, hey, you know what? While the blood's backing up, I have an alternate idea here. I'm going to grow some fat around me so that you can store there and wait in line until I can get to you later. That's America. Tons of Americans don't know they suffer from fatty livers. Again, these are all degenerated metabolisms. You're feeling different. You don't have a disease. Even your liver enzymes, your SGOT, SGPT, GTT, all your liver enzymes are normal. Your ALK-FOS is normal. The yearly physical exam, where you don't see any problems until it's too late, your yearly physical exam is normal. But your liver's growing fat. And of course, no one's doing the diagnostic test to determine that. You see, nobody's scanning the liver because it's not cost effective if there aren't any symptoms. And people who are getting their gallbladders out, people whose gallbladders are congested, which is where we'll be going in a moment, well, their livers are always going to be fat. And if you want to see fatty livers, watch what happens when they take their gallbladders out. Now, you have such a high correlation between fatty liver and cholecystectomy. I mean, it's ridiculous. And yet they'll tell you, hey, you can just snip that gallbladder out. You'll be just fine. If you're thinking about having that gallbladder snipped or being told you're going to be fine, guess again. Just get into the chat rooms. Go online and get into the chat rooms. You know, these chat rooms are interesting. I'm going to tell you something. I spend a fair amount of time in chat rooms. I never thought I would. I don't like all that stuff. It's kind of retarded to me. But you know what? I changed my mind. Because you can read the best articles in hard science. You can talk to the highest authorities in the land. And you do not find out reality. I kid you not. You do not find out reality until you actually get into the chat rooms to talk to the people who are on the bitter end of the stick. When they tell you there's no withdrawal symptoms to drugs or side effects because such and such and such a publication says so, or that a drug does this effectively because such and such a publication says so, and you get onto the chat rooms, or a surgery is 100% effective because such and such a study was run and it says so, because the Mayo Clinic says so, because Sloan Kettering says so, because the American Heart Association says so, go into the chat rooms if you want reality. So I don't knock the chat rooms anymore. Always a percentage of my time assessing different therapies and solutions and surgeries go to the chat rooms. It's like having a billion friends that have had the experience, and they're more than willing to give you reality. So look at that picture then. Back to that picture. Picture 7. You've got the healthy liver, the fatty liver. After the fatty liver, then you've got the fibrotic liver. Now, what does that mean? It means that the liver cells are dying. It means that they're deranging quickly. And the immune system picks up on this, blows a whistle, and you know what happens after that, right? You begin a low to mid-range inflammatory process, forcing the deposition or the laying down of a lot of, you guessed it, fibrin. You start to fibrose into the liver. This simply means that the liver cells are damaged enough to the point where the immune system picks up on the problem. And as it picks up on the problem, the immune system calls in a cell called a fibroblast, which lays down a lot of this gooey, spidery fibrin. And you know what we call that? The beginning of fibrosis. So, if we're talking about the liver and the gallbladder, and we're talking about clean that gallbladder out, clean those ducts out, well, that's a part of it. Drink the olive oil, get the bile flowing, so you can enhance the detoxification, the filtration of the blood, so the cells don't get it systemically. Part of it, right? But what's the other part of it? What's the inflammatory state of the liver? What condition is the liver in? Yes, you drink the olive oil, you do your coffee enemas. I hope you're getting lots and lots of copious bile flow. It's a whole other discussion. But if we go into the parenchyma, meaning the liver tissue itself, what are the condition? What is the condition of those cells? And there's great variability there, and this should be assayed. One should have a sense of this. Pretty soon, I'm going to bring on a lovely woman named Leslie. She's a thermographer. And I'm really going to get into thermography for you. And she's been a thermographer for quite a number of years. She's superb at what she does. She's very dedicated to what she does. And if you use thermography correctly, you don't just use it on the breast. You use it everywhere on the body. You give yourself thermographic examinations every so many months to keep a sense of the inflammatory levels of the body, including the liver. And this is the way we've got to be thinking. This is the way we have to evolve. This is where we should be putting our money to create diagnostic tests to prevent problems. We have the brains, and if we have the brains, we can create the technologies. Of course, later I'm going to argue that Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, they've already done this empirically. And those of you who listen to the show know what I mean by empiric. Empiric is, it's not what we call the double-blind placebo hard science. It's not the peer review article from Harvard. But it's time-tested, reproducible, trustworthy, and it works. Eastern medicine has understood how to assess, get a sense of the inflammatory state of each of your organs through all sorts of different palpatory assessments. There's ways of knowing. But what are they trying to determine? Well, that's what we're talking about today. So what's the point here? Your liver, my liver, her liver, his liver, the liver you had 20 years ago and the liver you'll have in 40 years are all in different inflammatory states. There's different level of scarring. Now, here's what's special to the liver. This is a unique quirk of the liver. If you're talking about the liver or each organ, you have to understand its peculiarities. You know, the liver is the last organ to let you know anything's wrong. The liver is the last organ to know, to tell you that anything is wrong. That's a peculiarity about the liver. You know, the first organ to tell you that something's wrong, your heart. Your heart is like a nervous little bird that's always chirping, that's ever vigilant to enemy attack, that's always blowing the whistle, even when the whistle doesn't need to be blown. That's your heart. Heart palpitations, increases in blood pressure, arrhythmias, tachycardias. The heart is an annoyed little bird, and anytime something in the blood begins to suggest something ominous, the heart starts screaming. Well, that's a good function. I mean, the heart, in a sense, is the watchdog of the blood. But the liver can take a beating. You get to hit the liver over the head 100 times before the liver even makes a sound. And here's what's wonderful about the liver. In case you're in any of these stages of fibrosis, so from healthy liver to fatty liver to fibrotic liver to cirrhotic liver, the liver will regrow itself. I am privy to a specific case right now where a very lovely young woman gave her brother 3/4 of her liver because he was going to die otherwise from a liver disease he had inherited. So the sister and the brother went into a surgery, and the woman had 3/4 of her liver removed and given to the brother for a transplant. And here's why I bring it up. The girl is told that within a year, I think even sooner, I can't remember the exact amount of time, but that the liver will regrow itself. She was told within a year or so, that liver will be completely regrown. My God, if we could do that to the brain, if you could do that to your ovary, your heart, your kidney, but you can't. You lose function there. Nothing regrows. But the liver can regrow. That's very good news. And perhaps it's because the liver is so key, has so many things to do. Perhaps we've just evolved with that safeguard intact. So if you are in some variable stage of inflammation, of scarring into that liver, you can reverse it. It's not till that liver gets cirrhotic that it's very tough to do. This is very important to understand in case you suffer that way or if you want radiant health. So radiant health of the liver, yes, you've got to get to the coffee enemas, you've got to get to the olive oil flushes, you've got to clean out the biliary system. Speaking of which, these olive oil flushes. Now, you know, I'm going to say a few things about the olive oil flush today because everybody's got their own brand, their own trademark. So I had to put two on the show today. Picture 24, that's Andreas Moritz. I think he's one of the great contributors to the gallbladder flush. It's a great book to get if you're interested. And then, of course, there was the infamous Holda Clark flush. That's on picture 25. So 24 was Andreas Moritz and 25 was Holda Clark. Lots of people put their names on these flushes. And there's lots of variations in the flush. There's even one with Coca-Cola. Then you have it with an apple juice prep that goes on for 3 or 4 weeks. I am just not into which flush you do. Do which flush works. But you see, most people don't know what that means. That's why I do this show. People spend all their time on these details. Should I use phosphoric acid? Should I use Epsom salts? What should I do if I don't like the taste of the Epsom salts? And so on and so forth. And the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter if you understand what the flush is. An olive oil flush means you drink olive oil so that the gallbladder, to emulsify the oil, starts squirting. You get whatever bile you have come down the pipe of the common bile duct to emulsify the olive oil. And because the gallbladder's got such a job to do, because you're drinking a fair amount of oil, you start dilating and contracting all your bile ducts. Now, those bile ducts go way up into the liver, right? So when we talk about a gallbladder flush or a liver flush, as far as the olive oil is concerned, it's the same thing. Again, people say, well, I'm going to do a gallbladder flush, but what about the liver flush? Or if you call it a liver flush, they go, well, that's not right, because what about the gallbladder? And it's because they don't understand. A liver flush is a gallbladder flush. Olive oil makes all the bile ducts in the liver and all the ducts in the gallbladder expand and contract in the event that you start pushing the crud, the solidified bile, the sludgy bile. Not just gallstones. There may not be gallstones. The bile may just be thick. The bile may not be thick. Here, let me show you a picture. Look at picture 16. Picture 16. It's telling you the bile is a yellow-green alkaline solution. Not in the beginning, it's not. The bile that comes out in the beginning, I guarantee you, is more acidic than it is alkaline. And the bile contains bile salts, bile pigments. Bile pigments are bilirubin. In the bile are the bile salts, which are derived from cholesterol, plus hemolyzed or destroyed red blood cells, lending their component part bilirubin to the bile salts, which are composed of cholesterol. When we say bile, we're not talking about bile as a single entity. Bile is a solution. Bile is a mixture of many things. If you're looking there at picture number 24, picture 16, that bile is a compilation of many different compounds. Bile is never bile. Bile is a solution of bile salts, of bile pigments, of cholesterol, of triglycerides, of phospholipids, of different electrolytes, of different trace minerals. And then what else? All the garbage, the toxic pesticide residues and the rest of the junk that the phase one and phase two liver function is dumping into the bile ducts. So if you're looking at picture 16, you're looking at a green vial of a green fluid. And you're calling that bile. And we know that part of the function of that is to emulsify fats. But that bile is mixed with a lot of other stuff, including all the garbage you want to get into the toilet. Very important to understand that. Now, when you drink the oil, all your bile passageways are expanding and contracting to move that stuff out. And then the blood can filter faster. And then we have a reverse process where the organs, which have concentrated their garbage because, well, they had to, because formerly, before you got into all these wonderful flushes, before you changed your life over a year or two or three, all these wonderful organs are stuffed with all the garbage that the blood sent it because it couldn't get out through the clogged, congested bile system. And I want you to catch this. As you open up biliary flow, as you clean the blood faster, the brain watches all of this. The brain is smart. The brain knows how to respond to this. And the way the brain responds is it starts telling the organs to shake out their garbage, first in the intercellular space and then within the cell itself. So there's this wonderful, sacred intelligence. You have a wonderful testimony here to the intelligence of the human organism as it selectively cleans itself. Now, when I say selectively cleans itself, I say selectively because your body's not going to do this until you're ready. This is the mistake. This is the myopia. This is the ridiculousness of people who are toxic, people who haven't cleansed, and people who have problems in organs. You have a problem in the eye. You have a problem in the ear. You have a problem in the kidney. You have a cardiovascular problem. When you're taking nutraceuticals, when you're taking herbs that are supposed to apply themselves to organs that are locked solid in their own filth, those herbs are going to be of diminished value. And yet you're not told that. You're told the simple black and white picture. Take the herb because studies say that the herb, or herbalists say, or Whole Foods says, or whoever says that the herb will fix the organ. It'll help your symptom, your health concern, and then you do it. And the fact is that until the body's intercellular, extracellular space is being cleared, you're going to rate limit significantly. You're going to marginalize the direct intention of the herb. So you've got to factor that in. You've got to learn from this wondrous process of blood to organ, of organ to blood, out through the bile ducts, if the biliary system permits. There are stages with your olive oil flushes. There are stages. In the beginning, you're going to get these big lumpy things. And then you're going to get these little lumpy things. And then you're going to get these tiny green things. And finally, in the later phases of your olive oil flushes, you're going to get nothing but liquid. That's a good sign. That's what you want. It means the bile's getting more alkaline. It means the bile is emulsifying the oil better and better and better. And on that basis, you're going to see what? Not the stones anymore. And those stones are not always stones. Sometimes you're going to have calcified grit, tiny pebbles, but a lot of the time, what you're calling the gallstone is not the gallstone. It's a mixture of bile, of olive oil, of all sorts of other crud there in the intestine, all thrown into a circle as a result of peristalsis. And they can be as big as large marbles, none of which are going to be up there in your biliary ducts, none of which are really going to be stored and popping out of your gallbladder, coming down the common bile duct. The common bile duct is usually at most 1 centimeter, at most. So when you're touting some of these releases into the toilet with cholesterol balls as large as Easter eggs, and you're thinking that was up there in your gallbladder, don't think that way. But do think, no matter what you do, that whatever comes out, do think that that's good, because it's cleaning your biliary system. It's just that not always are those things gallstones. They didn't come out of the gallbladder or the cystic duct or the hepatic ducts or the bile canaliculi. Now, that's one part of liver function. Then there's the blood of the liver. Look at picture 14. Picture 14 is blood flow through the liver. When that blood flow is static, when it's too slow, we say blood stagnation. Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, tremendous amount of focus on blood stasis. All the way down to, if you go down to the bottom there, picture 35. Clinical study, look at picture 35. Out of a Chinese hospital, clinical study on the relationship between liver blood stasis and liver fibrosis. That's the kind of study we should be doing here in America. Not Shanghai. The studies we should be doing here are studies like that. That study is basically telling you what you should know already. If the flow of venous blood through an important organ becomes stagnant, there's going to be a higher degree of inflammation in the organ, and so you're going to begin to see a fibrotic process develop. And that fibrotic process will sooner than later deprive you of optimal function. Now, that's common sense. We can infer this empirically, but here in this article, some Chinese hospital did a bona fide study of the relationship between the two. Again, we call it liver blood stagnation. There's biliary stagnation. There's blood stagnation. There's phase 1 and phase 2 detoxification of that liver. There's this shunting from the organ to the blood and out the bile duct, but from then the blood into the organ, creating fibrosis if the biliary system or if phase one, phase two can't handle it. Ah, I feel you now. This is show 266, a deeper exploration of liver and gallbladder function. And now I think it's an appropriate time to say, for those of you lost in the labyrinth of help, people who have health concerns and need help, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. Come ready to learn, make that office appointment, and let us help to create frameworks around which you begin to dig yourself out of your health hole. And I think this show, these shows, give clear testimony to what we're missing. We're missing perspective. We're not missing YouTube clips on what to eat and how to flush. We're missing enough education that allows you to string it together so you feel like you're competent in your navigation. And that's the edge of American holistic medicine, demanding, asking, beseeching that you, the public, start to put your understanding of health on the A list, not the C list. All right. Let's take a look here. Let's take a look at picture number 33. Let's hear from the Chinese on the liver. Look at these relationships Chinese medicine has made around the liver. The season for the liver is the spring. The color is green. The taste of the liver is sour. The sense organ, the organ that relates to the liver, the sense organ is the eye. To the kidney, it's the ear. How many people have biliary congestion, inflammatory processes in the liver that end up with detached retinas and glaucomas and all sorts of eye degenerations? I've met many. You can see them coming. In Chinese medicine, we say the liver type, the person whose emotion, look at the emotion. See what it says? So fascinating. The emotion we attach to the liver. If it's in balance, if your liver energy is balanced, you have drive, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger, great example. Politics aside, let's not get into all this nonsense here. But there's a guy who came from very little in terms of money, and his drive, if you know anything about him, everywhere he went, he had success. That's a liver in balance. That's what we mean by a balanced liver. What you want, you'll get, and you have a nice way of going about it. Now, out of balance, we say, when the liver's out of balance, then we're angry, we're frustrated. When the gallbladder is out of balance, we do nothing but worry. So people who are angry and worry and get into that negativity thing that's hostile, we say the liver is out of balance. And the sound the liver makes is when you shout. Now, the tissue is the sinew or the tendon. Look at what we're doing with this organ. We're attaching the eyes, the tendons, the emotions, the color, all to the organ. Critical. Why? Very important principle. And we'll conclude the show today with this very important principle. To open up the organ energies, to get the herbs, to clean the intracellular and inter or extracellular space, you have to get beyond the tendons and the muscles into the organs. The muscles and tendons are a shell. They're a protective capsule that prevents the healing from reaching into the deeper level of the body, that being the organ. And until you hit the liver to soften the tendon, and until you stretch the tendon to allow the organs to separate, you cannot really get therapy. regenerative therapy into the organ systems. Chinese medicine, Vedic medicine, ancient Egyptian medicine, many medicines understood this. It's why no one just did nutrition. Nutrition was always deeply integrated into the Tai Chi or the Qigong or the Kung Fu or the yoga. Key point. Does America integrate its holistic medicine? I think not for the most part, but that's where we need to go. Very good. A pleasure. We'll see you next week. Those of you who are still confused and can't get out of the labyrinth, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.